Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Bird is the word today, and Rich Guthrie is here to answer your questions about them. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, always a wildly popular guest on this program, so always good to get those calls in early. And we'll talk about birds, right? How's your bird? We'll find out on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds on the program today, and our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, is here to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Our number to call if you have a question about birds is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The way we work the emails, pretty much the same as the calls. They come in early, we try to get to the emails. Sometimes there are too many, we just don't get to them all, just like the calls. Our number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, welcome back to the program, sir.
Hey, Ray, good to be here.
Beautiful weather finally.
Oh, my gosh, isn't it?
And you say this is prime time now for
this
the birds.
This is it, baby. This is what we've been waiting for all winter long.
Yeah.
And this is this is when those little songbirds that have spent the winter down in the tropics in Colombia, Panama, Haiti, Dominican Republic, are now coming back home to visit us for the summer. And I'm going to tell you, when they show up, they're brilliant. They're singing their hearts out, trying to attract a mate, set up for nesting for the season. And bingo, this is the magic time of year.
We have the cardinals in our backyards now.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a little one, a little male cardinal running around.
Little male cardinal.
Yeah.
Well,
like a miniature.
Maybe something else, because
cardinal, man.
They come in one size. That's it.
Well, it wasn't as big as the usual cardinals I've seen.
Well, maybe he was a little further away.
No, he was 6 feet away, Rich, and he's been there 2 days in a row.
Take a picture.
Oh, you are. Okay. You know what? I don't know a lot about birds, but I know what a cardinal is.
Yeah, but here's the story. One size. That's it.
One size.
One size. They don't vary. If they a millimeter here and there, maybe.
Humans come in different sizes. Why not
that's
birds?
That's humans, not birds. Birds.
Really?
One size.
Are you sure there couldn't be some sort of a mutation?
Highly unlikely. You know, I'll give you that they're just outside, well outside the bell curve because it's a super steep curve.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is compacted into one couple of millimeters this way or that way.
Interesting. Could it be young bird?
No. Young, last year's young are fully grown and adult now.
And it's not time.
And it's not time for the young to come out of this. And young birds, when they come out of the nest, are just about full size.
All right, I'm going to take a picture next time.
Next
He's
picture.
Very, very friendly. He comes very near when I'm
happy.
Out taking the air.
I'm happy.
I'll take a picture, and I'll prove you wrong, Guthrie.
Okay, I'll be waiting.
All right, this email came in, and then we'll get to the phones.
Yes, sir.
This one is from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. He says, "Hi, Rich. We bird at a nature preserve near West Point in the Hudson Valley. We heard about a half dozen woodcocks calling on February 17th. They seemed to disappear after the snowstorms in March. We have not heard them since. Did they all leave?"
Probably. They were probably en route to someplace else.
Yeah.
February is very early in the season for them. Mm. And they are, they begin their migration right about then. And that bunch you heard, let's assume they survived the snowstorm, which is not always a safe assumption. You know, it's pretty tough out there.
Yeah.
But if they did, then the chances are they're up in Quebec by now.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, very good. Let's get to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here, as you may have surmised. Doug in Catskill. Doug, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a curious encounter with a raven yesterday, and I just wanted to hear Rich's comments on it. Anytime I've ever seen a raven in the wild, even when I'm, like, say, deer hunting and full camouflage, they always seem to see you and veer away from you. They never seem to fly over you. They always seem to be very cautious of humans. Yesterday, I was outdoors. I'm a carpenter. I was using my screw gun, which is an impact driver.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the sound that an impact driver makes.
Close enough.
Okay. Well, anyway, I had several moments when a raven flew over me and circled me while I was using the drill, or shortly after I had used the drill. And he was calling, and he didn't seem to be bothered by my presence at all. And the only thing I could theorize was that he confused the sound of the drill with another raven, possibly, or something else, and he came in to check it out.
And that's it's more than likely what it was, checking it out. Ravens are members of the crow family, as well as jays and magpies and the like. And they tend to be, as a family, they tend to be very curious, cautious and yet curious.
Yeah.
And the ravens, by the way, are newcomers into the Hudson Valley and to the Northeast, more or less. A few decades ago, they weren't here at all. Now they're here, not in abundance, but certainly in command presence.
Uh-huh.
So, and one down in the Catskill area, I suspect, has been around people long enough and dealing with people long enough that that group down there is probably accustomed more so to people than one that might have been in the wilderness of the Adirondacks or Appalachians.
Okay.
So my guess is that thing, you drew that thing in with the pounding sound of the nail driver, and he was probably checking out to see if there might be lunch involved.
Okay. Well, thank you, Doug. We appreciate you starting us off here today. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here to answer your bird questions. And Barbara in Olive Bridge. Barbara, you're next.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about bluebirds. I have had a bluebird box for many years, and we often get one, maybe two hatchings a year. And I've noticed from time to time that the eggs are not occupied, even though the birds may be around. Like this morning, I checked it. There were four eggs, and I saw the male watching everything. And I've seen the pair habitating the box and taking possession of the box. So I was just wondering if this is normal with bluebird eggs.
Well, yes, to an extent. That they're still around is a good sign. What happens is many birds, bluebirds included, will lay a series of eggs, but not start incubating until they are finished with the clutch for the year, so that all of the eggs are start to hatch out roughly the same time, so that they don't have a staggered hatching out. So they'll hold on to, they'll let a group of eggs sit until they're ready to incubate.
How long can you let an egg sit before you incubate?
Just a matter of days.
Oh, I see.
Just a matter of days.
Okay.
Some of them perhaps a little long. But that's one possibility. The other possibility is that, you know, you hate to think, but maybe the other bird has moved on.
Well, that happened one year. They did abandon the eggs, and because I waited a very long time, and it was maybe June, and I had to discard the eggs. But the other comment I wanted to say, I heard your program a couple of months ago, but I was driving, and this was one where people were calling in and saying, "Where are all the chickadees?" And I go to work in Rosendale, and I feed the birds there, and I also at home. And gave me pause because I have so many chickadees in both of those locations. So I just wanted to allay the fears of people that they've gone.
Well, thank you for that.
We have lots of chickadees.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Good. Well, I have to say that you're the holdout because in my situation, the chickadees are still few, but it's not a major concern. By the way, the goldfinches are back in abundance. Maybe we had the calls about the lack of goldfinches.
Yep.
They are back big time.
All right.
Chickadees, not quite so yet.
Well, Barbara, thanks for the call. It's Rich Guthrie today on Vox Pop, and we welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. Rob and Troy. Rob, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Rich. This is Rob, former ham radio operator from many years ago.
Hey,
I put out on a bird count with you.
Hi.
And we're good to talk to you. I emailed you about this about a year ago and meant to follow up, but never did. I saw what I identified as a northern water thrush out at Five Rivers, and other people were saying it's a Louisiana. And I was wondering if it was ever decided which one it was, whether it was the Northern or the Louisiana.
Well, thank you. The both of them occur at Five Rivers and elsewhere in the area, the Northern Water Thrush and the Louisiana Water Thrush. As the name suggests, one is more northerly in distribution than the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're both a species of warbler related to the oven bird, which is also a warbler.
Oven bird. Like a turkey?
No, this is a little bird that builds a nest that looks like, resembles a Dutch oven.
I see. Okay.
With a dome top and a side entrance. Very clever little nest.
All right, go on. I apologize.
No, we're good. But all three of those are ground-walking types of warblers. The northern water thrush likes ponded water, still water, and the Louisiana water thrush likes white water, rumbling water. You can find one on top of the dam, one down by the stream at the outlet of the dam. Both of them occur at Five Rivers and elsewhere in the area. So the chances are, yes.
Okay.
Maybe I saw both then. So, I'll head out to Five Rivers maybe this afternoon and take a look. The other question I had was, how rare locally are bobwhite?
Virtually don't exist, except for a few that have been released by somebody releasing game birds that they might have raised, 4-H project or a little project in the backyard.
Okay. Well, Rob.
Gotcha. I briefly stopped by at Black Creek Marsh last night, and I heard a bobwhite.
Yeah, we know that one is there. And you
can't,
when they call, you can't miss them.
You keep tabs on the bobwhite.
Definitely.
Yeah,
right.
Folks do.
Thanks
I mean, that
much.
One is very conspicuous because he says his name again and again,
loud
and clear.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Boyds, and we'll be back.
Support for WMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting two exhibits from the museum's permanent collection, Capturing the Essence and Fine Art Animals, information at arkellmuseum.org. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, historic bed and breakfast on the Rondout Creek in the Hudson Valley, now taking reservations for lodging and dining. Gift certificates available, the1850house.com. Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting single through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com. New Scotland Physical Therapy, Slingerlands, New York, providing orthopedic, neurologic, and pediatric therapy services, now offering fitness memberships, newscotlandphysicaltherapy.com. And Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Rich Guthrie. Birds today. Oh, a popular program. The lines are loaded. When you hear somebody hang up, that's the time to call. It's 800-348-2551. And Rich, before we get back to the phones, we'll get to the emails. But before we get to the emails, you have a list of things.
Do we ever.
All right.
This is May. Things are hopping out there.
All right, man.
Here we go. In first of all, a couple of events that I'm going to be participating in.
Oh.
I will say this, and that is on the 19th of May, Saturday, I'll be at Thompson's Lake State Park.
Oh, yes, lovely.
Doing an early morning bird walk, 8 a.m. That's not too early.
Yeah.
And then on the 25th through the 27th, there's the Taking Flight at the Catskill Center down in the Catskill Mountains of New York.
Yeah.
You can check both those out by going to the websites, the Minekill State Park, or rather Thompson's Lake State Park,
mm-hmm.
and then catskillcenter.org for those details. And some of the bird clubs around the area are really getting up and going out into the field. On Saturday, for example, the Catskill Preserve will be dedicated down at Catskill, New York, by the Green Land Trust. It's a wonderful new preserve down there. It's a ribbon cutting ceremony. Greenlandtrust.org. That's green with an extra E.
Right, like
as
the county.
In the Green County.
Right.
And down in Dutchess County, the Waterman Bird Club is doing their 100th anniversary May census that began back in 1919.
Yeah.
So this is number 100. Go to watermanbirdclub.org. That's Saturday the 12th as well. And then the Mearns Bird Club down in Orange County will be going to the Bashik Hill on the 12th. Mearns, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org for details. Hudson Mohawk Bird Club is doing their birds and breakfast at Five Rivers on Saturday.
Ooh.
6 a.m., 7 a.m., 8 a.m., and breakfast to be served afterwards.
I don't know what's on the menu. Got to be eggs, right?
Yeah, fresh eggs.
Yeah, delicious.
That's at Five Rivers. That's Hudson Mohawk Bird Club. Go to their hmbc.net for specifics. And the Sawmill River Audubon will be going to Britton Brook Sanctuary, and that will be on Saturday as well. It's at 9 a.m. Sawmill River Audubon.org.
You know, whenever I drove on the Sawmill, I thought it was the Audubon. Remember the Sawmill Parkway down there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the Audubon. Oh, yeah. They did, too. I hope they took
it. I never got a ticket.
But good for you. Sunday the 13th, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be going to Vishu Ferry Nature and Historic Preserve. Again, hmbc.net. Then a little more down in the Hoffman Bird Club over in Pittsfield is doing a whole bunch of stuff coming up. On Saturday, they will be going to the One World Conservation Center in Bennington, Vermont at 8 in the morning.
Okay.
And then they got a whole bunch of stuff afterwards. On the 17th, well, that was on the 16th.
Right.
On the 17th, Han Hollow. The 18th, Kent Falls. And then the 19th is Alita's Choice. And the 20th is Stafford Hill, 23rd Terringham Preserve.
What a long list.
All in Massachusetts. Yeah, they're active out there. So again, and then George Steele, who's been a our friend here, will be leading a bird walk on at the Mohawk River in Amsterdam, and that's on the 13th. That's at 6:30 a.m. Meet at the Erie Terrace Boat Launch in Amsterdam, New York, to meet up with them.
All right.
And then one more. George again at the Landis Arboretum, another one of our friends we can't overlook. That's on the 26th. Landis Arboretum, look at their website for details for George's walk at the Landis. And then I do want to mention that the event for the Friends of the IBA are doing the Winter Raptor Festival. That's coming up on the 13th and 14th from 10 till 4 and 11 till 4.
All right.
WinterRaptorFestival.com. That's over in Stillwater, New York, that wonderful grasslands out there in Washington County. Lots of hawks and owls to talk about.
All right. That's it.
Are we good?
All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening to the program. That's all the time we have for today. No, I'm kidding.
It is May. We're busy, busy, busy.
Guthrie, pare it down next time. All right, this is an email. We'll do a few emails and then back to the phones. This one came in from Pamela. I, too, just saw a small male cardinal, so Ray is not alone. If not a cardinal, what is it? That's from Pam. There you go, Guthrie.
Pam and Ray.
There you go.
I tell you, pictures.
Oh, come on. Could we both be wrong?
Yeah.
No, you, sir, are wrong. All right, let's go.
I'll accept that. I can do that.
Let's go to the next email. This one's from Joanne, who loves the show.
Thank you, Joanne.
Amazing.
We need a friend.
I know this sounds like a crazy question, but I always wonder and worry a bit about birds that fly so fast into thick woods, brush, trees, and hedges. Can they poke their eyes out or get hurt during flight?
Not in the woods. Birds are incredible. They have incredible eyes that can adjust to changing light situations.
Mm-hmm.
We take a little time going from light to dark and dark to light.
Yeah.
The eyes have to adjust. Birds, their pupils adjust to that almost instantaneously, for one thing. Then they have incredible eyesight and agility. So they can zip through the woods. Some of them are better than others. I've seen birds, you know, crash into a treetop.
Yeah.
You know, force landing. But they're not suited to land in trees, a rail or a sandpiper. Or the
But accidents could happen, right?
Right. The big danger is windows and buildings. And they don't have any mechanism for coping with those. And that's a real tragedy.
All right. This one is from... I'm not sure who it's from. doesn't say. Hi, Rich. Oh, it does say. It's Martha from Hadley with a question about bluebirds. We have a pair in our backyard beginning to nest. We put mealworms out in two different types of feeders in the tree next to their box, and they have yet to feed on them. Any suggestions? And that's from Martha in Hadley.
Keep it up, because when they find them, you'll be their best friend, and vice versa.
All right, this one is from Winnie in Tolland. As a kid growing up in Connecticut, I loved to hear the whippoorwills at night. I haven't heard one now in probably 50 years. What happened to them?
Well, whippoorwills and nighthawks are related. They're these ground-dwelling birds that fly around at night.
Yeah.
We used to have lots of both of them around. Virtually impossible to find a nighthawk in our area anytime. The whippoorwills have been reduced to just a few select locations in the area. I know in our area, you can go up into the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains where you can, at night, you can still hear some whippoorwills, Tongue Mountain, West Mountain, and other areas, Green Lake area up in the Adirondacks, and some local areas in, let's say, the Capital District. But aside from that, they've virtually disappeared. And it probably has more to do with food than anything else. Night flying insects are on their menu. And they've been having a tough time.
So the eBird site that you are one of the people in charge of, or at least you review things for eBird, what are the numbers of whippoorwills now? I mean, are they on the rise at all? Or
negative. No, they're holding their own. Very, very tenuous hold on their own right in our area.
Okay.
Again, a little further north, they seem to be doing better, but you know, we worry about our local populations. And the Department of Environmental Conservation and Parks and Recreation are getting together to work on improving situations where whippoorwills may be found. They need to get a foothold in a new place where the woods might have changed over the years, and now they're managing to try to bring them back so that we can hold on to a sustainable population.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and we go to David in Johnstown. David, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Do birds, and particularly crows, have a sense of smell?
No. No.
How can they look at a bag of garbage and know there's something to eat inside?
Well, now you're talking now. Because, first of all, they've learned by watching other birds that if you rip into that plastic bag or whatever, there may be something inside. Whether it's good or not is, you know, left to be
determined. So birds have no sense of smell?
Not all birds. Most birds do not. Vultures have been shown to have a sense of smell. And some of the seabirds actually have a sense of smell. They find their nest burrows on islands by using a sense of smell.
Huh.
And when we get a chance, I want to point out where we can watch seabirds at their nest colonies on live cam shows.
Great. Well, let's let David follow up first. David, do you have a follow-up question?
Oh, that's all right. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
All right, Rich, you sound excited about it.
Oh, I want to tell you, this is more fun than you can imagine.
Well, I can imagine quite a lot of fun.
Well, here we go.
All right.
There is webcams out there all about birds. This is a Cornell University website. And you could watch birds coming to a feeder in Panama or osprey nesting in Missoula, Montana.
Ooh.
Or the cahow, which is a open ocean seabird nesting in a hole in the ground in Bermuda Islands.
Mm.
Also, that's allaboutbirds.org.
Okay.
Look for the live webcams. Wild Birds Unlimited. WBU.com, and then look for the live cam on there. Again, and Audubon.org. You can watch. This is the greatest of them all, I think. Well, at least so is that one in Panama.
Yeah.
Seal Island Marine Atlantic Puffin. You can watch a webcam there. It is hilarious to see. Audubon.org. And then go to their website and look for the webcam on Seal Island.
Now, what's funny about puffins?
Oh, they're comical little birds.
Are they?
Yeah, chunky little things with stubby wings and a beautiful, beautiful bill. And right now, they're all coming in from the ocean and doing their little courtship maneuvers as they land on there. They're big puff balls. And you can also watch the seals out on the rocks, the waves coming in, the seagulls and the gulls in turns calling back and forth, but mainly the puffins.
All right, the puffins are doing their courtship. Is this safe for family viewing?
Yes, of course.
All right.
I mean, they're just dancing around on the rocks by the sea.
And they'll cut the video when things get heavy, right?
Oh, you take your chances.
All right, fair enough.
It's nature.
Let's go back to the phones. John and Kanan. John, you're on.
Rich Guthrie, I'm so glad to talk to you. I've been waiting a year to ask this question almost. About this time last year, I was using a tractor to clear some brush, and I scared a ruffed grouse out of the underbrush. And I didn't think very much about that until about 3 weeks later. I was mowing my lawn with a zero-turn lawnmower. I have a big lawn, but in one area of the lawn, all of a sudden, I saw this same grouse behind my lawnmower. And I would go down, run the lawnmower down the course of the lawn and come back the other way. The grouse would follow me and sometimes would hop to the side and then fly beyond me and then come back at me, always following along the lawnmower, and proceeded to do this, getting closer and closer and closer throughout the summer. At one point, I stopped the mower, and the bird would circle the mower. At one point, late in the summer, the bird hopped up on the mower and came within inches of me.
Yeah.
What was going on?
It's a good question, and you're not alone in that. The rough grouse is crazy in that behavior. They do seem to be attracted to motorized machines. Your lawnmower, an automobile, a tractor, they for some reason they are drawn to these, and they just hang out, follow around. The reason behind it is it's usually the male, from what I can tell.
Yeah,
this is a female.
Okay, well there you go. That takes care of that. Both of them might follow around, and the reason for that I don't know. That the suspicion is that there's a nest nearby, and they're doing their best to either draw your attention away from the nest, or to protect the eggs and young. But late in the season, that wouldn't be.
It's not that they were in love with either the driver or the machinery itself, right?
No, don't take it personal. Well, maybe.
All right, John. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that's a very peculiar thing about the grouse, and it happens again and again. We hear about that out there.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today, and Marianne in Albany. Marianne, you're on.
Hi, thank you. This has to do with feeding birds again. I have a neighbor who frequently throws white bread out, and of course this attracts mice and things like that. Can you say something about feeding bread to birds? I mean, is that good for their diet?
Well, there's a big controversy out there, and there's this story going around that feeding bread to birds is not good. The jury is still out on that. Personally, I don't think it's as big a deal as people are making it to be. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that's being suggested that it is actually harmful. I don't buy into that. I think that people were connecting dots going in the wrong direction. They're just making assumptions that were not solid.
Okay.
But
okay. Now the other thing is the worms, and I recently heard about the Asian jumping worm that can ruin soil. Has anybody looked at that as far as birds eating those worms?
Well, the effect of that invasive alien species of worm on the birds is probably negligible. I don't know that there would be a harmful correlation between that source of protein and any other source of protein. So
okay.
The harm is elsewhere, not on the bird population, as far as I know.
All right, Marianne, thank you very much for the call. And we go over to Ujala. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Port Ewan, right on Hudson River.
Okay. Well, you're on.
All right.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Ray, and I heard somebody earlier. I saw a small cardinal also, and I thought it was unusual.
You see?
And I thought, this is what babies look like? I know there was somebody else that just called before me and said the same thing, so I just want you to know something's freaky is happening.
Okay, now we have three people. Now, this is still not scientific, but, Rich, I think we got
you. This is not science. However, it's a good start. Now we need to complete the study.
Right.
So pictures and relative size of comparison.
All right, we'll try to get a picture. Well, thank you very much for the call and for backing me up.
All right.
Have a good one.
These guys are teaming up on me. What is this?
You know what? Sometimes the truth must come out.
That's why we're here, to learn.
All right, Rich, let's go over to Ed in Del Mar. Ed, you're on.
Hey, Del Mar, where are we? Revere all our radio personalities.
Ah, you see? Good old, dear old Del Mar. Sure.
Right. So Here's the question. Actually, this is a response to the gentleman who called at the beginning of the show about the ravens. And, you know, he's a carpenter and he was using the nail gun.
Mm-hmm.
He said they were approaching him and et cetera. I have sort of a similar story, and it might shed a little light on his adventure. So in the middle of the winter, we had ice dams on the roof, and I got up on the ladder and with a hammer and was tapping away, you know, chipping away the ice. And out of nowhere, a pileated woodpecker, first he started calling, and then he actually approached us, you know, was on a tree, clearly curious about what was going on, et cetera. So, you know, I'm presuming the woodpecker was attracted by the tapping sound that the hammer was making on the ice and the screwdriver or whatever tools we were using. Maybe this gentleman actually saw a pileated woodpecker as opposed to a raven. And, you know, he's not on the lines at the moment, so we can't really confirm it.
But. Well, I actually buy both stories, the pileated and also the raven. And I might add to one other thing is that woodcutters, stories in the older books will talk about somebody chopping wood and having a pileated woodpecker fly in. and hunters will talk about after a gunshot, they will see ravens or other birds come flying in, especially further north where ravens are more. Where a bolder and more prominent.
So is the sound that attracts them?
Some of them vibration? Associate the sound with a rival, another woodpecker banging on the wood, or they learned over time that after the gunshot, there may be a free lunch available.
Oh, okay.
Where the hunters will leave their clean game, the offal behind. So,
would the pileated be defending or, you know, interested in his territory in January or February?
Not likely. Not like
him, or?
No, not likely, but he was probably curious to know if he had company, and we'll take that matter up later.
All right, Ed, we have to take a break here, but thank you for calling. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support for WMC comes from Interim Healthcare. For 47 years, helping families keep loved ones at home, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the greater Capital Region, Columbia and Saratoga counties, and Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world, waldorfsaratoga.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, practicing aesthetic plastic surgery, working to help people improve their appearance and well-being, a surgeon's hands, a woman's touch, capekplasticsurgery.com. And Curtis Lumber, featuring Great American Kitchen, Wellborn Cabinets, and Cambria Quartz Countertops, 100% American-made products by American workers, sold locally by Curtis Lumber, curtislumber.com.
Rich Guthrie's looking around the studio trying to find the birds. Now, it's just a recording, Rich. It's okay. It's 800-348-2551, the phone number here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And this one came in via email from Alan in Colony. I've heard from many sources all birds are the descendants of dinosaurs. True or false?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are dinosaurs with feathers or... Yeah, there were so many similarities. I remember growing up before that whole thing came around, and I had it in my head that they were dinosaurs on the wing.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what
so
gave
many
you that idea as a youngster?
Well, you could see the similarities between the bird's physiology and the reptilian physiology of dinosaurs, and you know, as evidenced by modern day reptiles, the scales, the egg, the pattern of where the feathers emerge and the like, it's all a matter of adaptation, evolution, and continuum.
Very interesting. Rich Guthrie is our guest.
And now they're finding that some of those dinosaurs actually had
feathers.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like sealing the deal.
Cool. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And let's go over to Melly in Chazy, New York. You're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there? Who is there? Is anybody there?
I like Chazy, New York, way up by the Canadian border.
Yes, way up north, right to the east of West Chazy.
Okay.
Are you there, Melly? Okay, we lost Melly. Let's go to the next person on the list who has been waiting a scant 19 minutes and 8 seconds. Let's go over to George in Albany. George, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
I saw a very strange thing the other day. Let me give you a little backstory. I'm a budding amateur wildlife photographer. And my girlfriend and I took a ride Saturday up to Missisquoi National Wildlife Refuge and
Sandbar
State Park.
Yes.
Yeah, it's way up there. So there's one spot about 30 miles south of there. It's Sandbar State Park in Milton, Vermont, just southeast of Grand Isle.
Mm-hmm.
There's one stretch of road. There's power lines there. On just about every set of power lines, there's an osprey nest. And along adjacent to it, there's a row about a quarter of a mile long of tall trees, and there's a blue heron rookery there. There has to be 30 or 35 blue heron nests right there.
Cool. So it's like condominiums.
It's incredible. I've never seen so many blue herons at the same time in my life, and I'm 47 years old. I'd never seen an osprey at all in real life in my life, and I must have seen 50 of them Saturday morning.
There you go.
So the question is, at one point, one of the ospreys was harassing a nesting pair of blue herons in those trees. And it's for about 10 minutes. He was dive bombing them in their nests. And I would assume that with them nesting so close together, that there's a harmony there. Like, they probably don't even pay any attention to each other. Two completely different types of birds, you know. But this one osprey kept for about 10 minutes was basically attacking these two herons in their nest 40 feet in the air in a tree.
What do you think?
I'm just curious as to what could maybe possibly make an osprey behave like that.
Well, it's all about the nest, the babies and the young. What you were seeing there, first of all, yes, they do get along more or less harmoniously in parallel or nearby situations like that. But you had an insecure individual who interpreted the large great blue heron as a potential threat to their eggs or young. So it was an osprey taking matters into its own hands. So that's the way I would interpret it. You know, if there were another bird nearby, the osprey would be just as aggressive nearby the nest. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that it was just a matter of territorial protection.
All right. Well, thank you, George. We appreciate that call. And the number here is 800-348-2551. Joe in New Baltimore. Joe.
Yeah, hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I just had a question. My neighbor recently had a robin's nest in his gazebo, and he didn't want it messing up the place. He didn't realize what was in it, so he took the nest down and spotted some eggs, put it in a lilac bush, and the next day, the mother or father, whoever, came over and started incubating the eggs again, found the nest, and sat on it. I was just wondering, is that unusual?
Yes, it is.
For a bird. Yeah. He asked me if I ever heard of it. He was worried about, you know, the old wives' tale about touching the nest and the eggs, and they won't come back. And I told him about that same sense of smell that you talked about earlier. But, no, you haven't heard about that as a regular thing?
No.
Finding the nest after you move it.
That's very unusual, and I don't recommend it, but I'm glad that it's working in that situation. However, you're right about that birds will come back to a nest or eggs or babies if they've been handled by people. That's an old country tale that needs to be dispelled. However, a nest that has been handled will leave a scent trail that other predators might find, rackety coons or skunks or possums.
Did you say rackety coons?
Yes, indeed.
It's raccoons, right?
Yes, it is. Cool.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Joe, thanks a lot. We got to move it along here, but I appreciate the call very much. Rich Guthrie, who is just rich in sort of colloquial language here today.
Well, at 10 at night, they are rackety.
All right, fair enough. Let's go over to Roger in Clifton Park. Roger.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a couple of bird songs that I've heard in my backyard for a couple of years.
Oh, good.
And there's one in particular that I have not been able to identify. I've tried going on the internet and searching different birds, and I'm at a loss for figuring it out. So I record it myself,
mimicking that call.
So I thought if I could play that.
Sure.
And might be able to give me some insight.
Absolutely.
I've got an idea, though.
Okay.
So, okay, here's the one that I've heard for years. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Any thoughts on that?
Nope.
What do you mean, nope? It was a perfect job.
Oh. Okay. Okay, now, the next one I want to play for you, I think maybe a cardinal, because I've got three different versions that I've heard, and just yesterday, I finally saw a cardinal fly away after I had heard one of them.
Okay.
So let me see if this one, it doesn't say what size the bird is.
Perfect, perfect. There's your cardinal.
Okay.
Full-size cardinal.
All right, fair enough. But let's hear the other one more time, Roger, because, you know, I love it when Rich doesn't have any clue about it.
Oh, no.
So let's hear we're
back up.
Let's hear it one more time.
I was just toying with you, Roger.
You knew it?
Yeah. It's going to be another cardinal.
The other one's a cardinal?
A variant of the cardinal song from a little cardinal.
Really?
No. From a full-size cardinal. Yeah.
So that's a cardinal as well?
It's a variant of the cardinal song. And the other one, I think, just... hit the home run for you.
Why were you playing with us, Rich Guthrie? Thank you, Roger, for that, and we appreciate the SFX. That's very nice. You knew all along.
Well, I had a sense that that's what it was. It's not very typical, but the second one was spot on, and there you go. Connected.
So the
dots.
Variant like that is not unheard of.
Oh, no. No. Right. In fact, yeah, the cardinal will do a variety of different songs. Most birds do have a little repertoire that they will repeat.
And why would one be played at a given time as opposed to another? Just randomly?
A good question. I think just not that it has any specific meaning, like, you know, pizza served tonight and tomorrow we're having coffee.
Well, how do you know?
Well, because that's not how they work. It's not a communication, a verbal type of communication, but it is maybe just trying to see if his luck will work better attracting a female with a different song.
Interesting. Let's go over to Jeremy in Chatham. Jeremy.
Hi there. So here's the situation. We've had this little wren house up for many years, and the wrens come and blah, blah, blah. So my wife put up this, well, it's not really a birdhouse. It's a decoration kind of shaped like a birdhouse. The opening is about 3 inches, and the wrens seem to be building a house or a nest in there. And I'm thinking, man, that's probably a bad idea because much bigger birds are going to be able to get into that hole and probably mess with the eggs or something. What do you think?
Well, wrens do that. And that's a very good observation. Wrens do that. They will build one nest that, this is home. And then it will build the male, for the most part, will go out and build a bunch of other nests, dummy nests, just to throw off any potential predator, presumably. So, keeps him busy, out of trouble, while she's back at home incubating eggs and waiting for them to hatch. So it's presumably to throw off other potential nest robbers.
So you don't think they're going to actually lay the eggs in that one?
No, not likely. One nest will do it. The rest of them are just kind of dummy nests.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. That's interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy. We appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, the guest. John in Stockbridge is next.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
My question is about the Baltimore Oriole.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it plenty of times in South County, Berkshire County, in the spring, like now. But I can't seem to ever find it in Stockbridge. And short of throwing out oranges and nectar, is there a different topography or what am I looking for to try to attract this bird around here? I never see it anymore.
Well, the Baltimore Oriole is a neotropical migrant just coming back. I heard only my second one this morning while at the post office in town.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to find them is to hear them, that musical song that they have. And variations to that. You know, like the cardinal has variations, so do orioles. And they like tall trees, pendulant type of branching on them, like the old silver maples or the elm trees, willows. And aside from that, now as far as feeding them oranges or the like for food, you have to find an oriole that has experienced this before, because for the most part, when they're up here, they're not looking for oranges. So they you'll need one that spent the winter, let's say, in Texas or Florida, where people do put out oranges and orioles are attracted to it. So you need one that has seen that firsthand down there and brings it back home.
Do you peel the orange first?
No, just slice it in half and nail it to a tree trunk, and they will come to it. But down there, they got lots of oranges. They get, and that Panama feeder at the Cornell website, whoa, that's where you watch and see the birds coming in to feed on oranges and bananas and fruit.
So they will just put fruit in the Panama feeders?
Yes, they put them out there and all sorts of things. It's fabulous.
Wow, that's really cool. John, thanks for the call. Let's get a few more in here before the end of the program. Who is next? Looks like Bill in North Adams. Bill, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Just talking about nestlings, Rich. I know you like blue jays. I must say, they had a pair about 6 years ago here in North Adams. They built a nest on a trestle, and I climbed the ladder. It was a little higher than I, and I found six hatchlings in there. The two initial rows, three in the front, three in the middle. They were well-rounded, large. The last two nestlings in the back, they had the big heads and small bodies like a miniature horse, but they all hatched successfully, and they all lived happily ever after, I guess. I didn't see any feathers in the yard, and the parents were super. They fed them every day and so forth. I'd share that with you.
Thank you. And I have blue jays. Once again, for the third or fourth year in a row, they're building a nest on my porch.
Yeah.
Within arm's reach of me. When I sit out there having my coffee in the morning, they come by, they kind of like pretend we don't see each other, and they carry on.
That's great.
It's great.
Thanks, Bill. And over to Philip in Orange, Massachusetts. Philip.
Hi. I have a question about hummingbirds. Last night... we haven't had any hummingbirds yet, but last night a raccoon climbed up on the porch and wrapped his paw around the hummingbird feeder. Do I need to wash it to get away kill that scent?
Okay.
No, not really. However, that raccoon will be back again. He'll remember that the treat that you offered.
Yeah.
So the raccoon will not impart anything that will affect the feeder or the health or the quality of the food that's in there, but... It will raid that feeder again, I guarantee.
So just take it down for a while, or what would you do?
Take it down or move it to where they can't reach it, extend it out on some sort of like a flowering plant hanger pole.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's hanging from the middle of the porch. Maybe I should move it towards the house side.
Well,
you really don't want the raccoon in the house,
right? Yeah, you'll want to have to experiment. Just think of a raccoon and how ingenious they are, and try to outsmart them.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Philip. We appreciate the call. And we have time for a call or two more here. Owen in Albany. Owen, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Hi. Real quick story from last week on the Mohawk River. Watching from across the river, a hawk up in a tree, and I just, for kicks, let out a whistle with no particular talent behind it, but I knew it sounded like something hurt, because I don't whistle that well.
Yeah.
So I missed, the sun went behind a cloud, and we cooled off, the hawk took it in the car, so after several whistles, got up and walked to the car. By the time we got to the car, which was only about 50 yards away.
Owen, we kind of lost you there. It sounded a little bit like Eisenhower's D-Day broadcast for a while.
Faded out there.
Yeah.
A whistle will attract a hawk if it thinks that there may be a meal involved there.
Okay. Let's go quickly to Eric in Corinth. Eric, you're on.
Hey there. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. I've read varying bits of information about ruffed grouse. And I live up in northern New York here. And, I've read things about the 10-year population cycle and that they are losing a lot of habitat and they're, moving towards being not extinct, but, you know, pretty rare.
Yes.
I was just wondering what you think about the population of the ruffed grouse up here in this area and the Adirondacks. And
definitely declining. Definitely declining. A number of factors. The turkey has moved in, strong competition, and we have more predators out there in the form of coyotes and foxes and the like. So, and habitat changes. So the ruffed grouse population is, we used to see them all the time.
More
down
predators
here.
Now?
Say that again?
More foxes, more coyotes?
Oh, yeah.
Why
yeah.
Why is that?
Habitat change and also range expansion and some other factors involved.
That's
there,
very
sure.
interesting.
But also the turkey, I think, is probably a big factor. So we used to have lots of rough grouse around and not so much anymore. It's pretty hard to find them.
All right, Eric, thank you for the call. I guess that will have to be the last one. Richard P. Guthrie, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, two ways. First of all, I'd like to encourage folks to use ebird.org, report sightings, whether common or uncommon or rare. Pictures, always welcome.
So is it e-bird or just ebird, like one word?
Ebird. One word, .org.
Okay.
And that'll get you in there, and then you sign up if you're not a member yet. And it's free, it's open to the public, and it's interactive. And then the other thing is richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
And do you have the blog?
The blob is at the Times Union.
The blob, not the blob, the blog. Yes, it's at the Times Union website.
Yes.
Richard Guthrie, thank you for being here, my friend. And we will get pictures of the miniature male cardinals, and you'll be sorry. All right, let's wrap it up here. Support comes from assisted living at the Massery Residence at Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors help with activities of daily living, friends, family, community, 518-689-0453 for information on tours. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. George Heigl Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in buying and selling antique collections for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. At Nine Pin Cider, Albany, hard cider made from local apples, tasting room, features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits, open Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut, ninepincider.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for joining us today. Thanks to you for listening, the great calls, the great emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the Science Forum returns. Right now, stand by for news.